Hello, and welcome to Databook, a podcast from Chief Healthcare Executive that looks at technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. I'm Ron Southwick, lead editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. This is our first episode of Databook in 2026, and we've got a good one. We're talking with Michael Miucci, the CEO of Arcadia, a health data company based in Boston. Michael talks about the growing adoption of AI and how health systems and payers can make sure they're getting the most of it. He discusses the challenge of moving forward quickly and safely, and some of the pitfalls to avoid in implementing new AI tools. He also talks about ways to make progress in AI in the year ahead. It's a great and timely conversation. Thanks for joining us. This is Databook. Well, thanks for joining us today. We are talking with Michael Miucci, the CEO of Arcadia. Michael, thanks for taking the time today.
Great to be here, Ron. Thanks for having me.
Well, you've been CEO of Arcadia for a little over 3 years. Let's just talk about your journey as a healthcare leader and how you got there.
So I've spent the majority of my career at Arcadia, one of the early pioneers in population health and data integration. My journey took me really from product strategy and product vision, spent a lot of time on go-to-market, sales, marketing, a little bit of time in operations to really understand how our products are implemented, how they're optimized, how our customers use them. And when the opportunity presented to lead the business, I was really excited to jump in. I think one of the biggest challenges in healthcare tech today is you're dealing with an end market that's under an enormous amount of pressure. They're looking to technologists to help them transform the way that they operate, the way they provide care, the way they serve up data and insights. And there is a lot of willingness between payers and providers and life sciences organizations to work with entrepreneurs to transform our care delivery experience. And I feel very privileged to have an opportunity to be a leader in the space, along with many of my peers and colleagues in the business who've been with me for the better part of a decade.
Well, since you work with both payers and providers, it gives you a lot of interesting perspectives on the industry for sure. What are you hearing as their main concerns, especially as we head into a new year?
It's an interesting time. I spoke at our user group meeting a few years ago, and I said that operating in healthcare today is like the opening lines of A Tale of Two Cities. It's the best of times and the worst of times. And I think that what I'm hearing is the primary concern from executive peers in this space is how do you balance the fact that you have AI, which we can at this point, kind of definitively say will transform the way we provide care, whether it's the way that we access care as consumers, the way that providers gain insights onto how to drive diagnostic journeys, the way that data is exchanged. Like it's going to impact everything. How do you implement that at scale, safely, with compliance? We operate in a time with heightened cyber threats from nation state actors. And so as we adopt these AI solutions, we're sending data to more endpoints than we always have. And so how do you balance innovating quickly with securing your perimeter? So I hear that a lot is how do you balance this one foot on the gas with let's deploy and test and learn, with the foot on the brake, which is let's make sure that we're not sending data to places that we don't need to. I hear questions around affordability. This is in the national news right now around healthcare affordability, premium affordability. And I hear that from payers, providers, employers. Everyone is wrestling with cost, and outcomes. If our outcomes aren't materially better, why does our healthcare cost so much more? And the challenge too, that you have remarkable technology that is available to change patients' lives, whether it's GLP-1s and just the growing number of applications of the GLP-1 to improve overall human health, whether it's improving diabetes management, improving obesity, improving kidney care. There's all the studies on inflammation and potential cancer risk avoidance. Amazing, but really expensive. I have one customer who told me that if all of their patients who were eligible for a GLP-1 were to initiate a GLP-1, like they would go bankrupt effectively overnight. And so there's this challenge of The technology is at our fingertips, but the affordability is a question. The same thing is true for a bunch of these gene editing technologies for super rare disease. How do you afford a treatment that costs millions of dollars but could save or transform someone's life? These are all like cost and affordability questions that we have to wrestle with. And I think the last piece is everyone is concerned with consumer experience. You hear providers say, I want to provide a better experience to my patients. Payers are focused on experience. Consumers are demanding better experience. So, how do you bridge virtual care? There's this new CMMI model, the access model, which is really focused on allowing consumers to choose digital therapeutics to manage their chronic diseases. How do you bridge that data with the data that lives inside of an academic health system or their primary care provider's office? How do you coordinate that care? How do you make sure that we're responding to what I think are evolving consumer sentiments around where and how and the modality through which they receive care? And you put that all together, and I think what I hear the most from my peers is there's a lot. It's a lot that's changing, and how do I possibly keep up with it in an environment where resources are increasingly constrained? Not to mention, you've got this federal government right now, an administration that is pushing out model after model after model, which I am personally really excited about. I think that the pace of change that's being driven by the team at HHS and at CMS and CMMI is really remarkable. I think you're seeing the government really try to push a lot through right now. But at the same time, you have operators at plans and health systems and provider organizations who are like, this is a lot. How do I keep up with this? And how do I manage the pace of change and the implementation of change?
Well, I like that you went from Charles Dickens to AI and with a just few seconds. So, but let's talk about that because you mentioned some of those dueling pressures. There's obvious excitement for AI, and you mentioned how the expectation that it is going to transform healthcare. But there's also these cost pressures that a lot of organizations are wrestling with, and some of those pressures may grow in the coming year. Do you have any concern that because of some of those cost pressures that might slow down some adoption or implementation of new AI strategies, or do you think that might drive them faster because organizations need to find different ways to do things?
I think what we're wrestling with is a land of haves and have-nots. If you look at some of the largest health systems in the United States and some of the largest health plans, they have massive balance sheets. I live in Boston. I'm not going to name names, but there's an organization in this city that probably has $20 billion of cash on hand. Their operating margin isn't that impressive. It's not unimpressive. It's positive. It's good. They're a healthy health system. They've got great revenue. But those cash reserves will allow them to invest in innovation and invest in their future. It's no different than the old adage that you want to spend a lot of money on tires in your mattress, things that connect you to the ground. And I think that that's how a lot of organizations that are well capitalized and well funded are thinking about this moment. Spend money and invest behind projects that will transform the future. If you think that you can transform your patient experience with AI or transform provider experience by building the best provider tech suite, and there's a valid business case that will create financial sustainability 5 years out, you can make those trade-offs. That being said, you have an enormous number of hospitals in rural communities that are struggling with some of the biggest financial pressures they've ever seen, and with cuts to Medicaid and the ACA and population demographics, those organizations are struggling to stay open. We've seen a staggering number of closures of rural facilities, and those are organizations that can't look to their balance sheet and say, well, I'm going to make a $10 million bet on an AI solution that should create $50 million of return in 5 years. These are organizations that are trying to figure out how to make payroll, pay their vendors, pay their suppliers for the next 6 weeks. And so I think that you have this land of haves and have-nots. What I'm seeing from payers and providers that we work with is that when there is a solid business case, there is a connectivity to the mission. So is this going to allow providers to provide better care? Are patients going to receive better care? Is it going to create financial sustainability or scalability? There is broadly a willingness to drive those adoptions. I'm also seeing a lot of trends, and this reminds me a lot of the work that we see in the technology ecosystem, where assumptions are being made around productivity gains from the implementation of solutions. And you have leaders in healthcare organizations who are saying, I'm going to allocate capital to that technology project and not as much human capital. So they're assuming the productivity gains before the implementation, which puts even more pressure on success.
Well, then, what are the keys? And I think you actually started suggesting a couple keys already, but how do you make sure that you're getting a real return on investments in AI, especially since the organization is starting to do things and some are doing pilot projects, some are doing more aggressive strategies, but how do you make sure that you're really getting a return on investments in AI?
Well, I think first you have to define what the return is. Ambient Scribe's probably one of the more scaled uses of AI in healthcare. I think they're fantastic. When people talk about ROI on Ambient Scribes, I think the first place that we want to go is, oh, this should make providers more efficient. They should be able to see more patients per day. Revenue should increase. That's realistically not the case. But what is the case is we see we're in a period of time where we have a provider shortage, and we see providers exiting medicine at higher rates than we've seen historically. And that's broadly a dissatisfaction or frustration with the workload, the administrative burden, any number of factors. So if an ambient scribe can drive better job satisfaction, I was talking to our team about this the other day. We have a big project at Arcadia around developer experience and what tools do we provide our software engineers to allow them to be more productive and happier with the technology and the tools they use. It's the same thing. What's the provider X? What's the provider tech platform? And how does the health system use that to recruit and retain? And if you can avoid providers leaving to go to a different system or leave medicine altogether, that's creating revenue sustainability, and it's cost avoidance, because I think last I saw the cost to replace a provider is into the seven figures at this point. So the ROI, like to ensure you're getting ROI, you need to figure out what you're measuring first, and that needs to be the foundation of your business case. And I think a lot of leaders are starting to question the adage of, do I just want another visit a day, or am I really looking to avoid cost elsewhere?
It was really interesting you talking about that because that's a conversation I've had with different physicians and even health system leaders too, that the concept of efficiency and sometimes doctors will wince a little bit when they say AI solutions or other tech solutions will make things more efficient because a lot of times people are saying, I'd like to have a little less pajama time, or they're also saying, I'd like maybe a couple extra minutes to actually talk with my patients, so maybe you can talk about things like preventive medicine or talk about mental health or doing things like that. So I think there's a lot of enthusiasm about getting some more time to pay with patients and really kind of doing more preventive things, especially on the primary care end. But if it's about me having to see more patients, I think that's where enthusiasm can really dim with some AI solutions.
I think that's exactly right. And I think, we talked about the provider, but I think that's true for AI solutions that impact the administrative staff as well. If you think about nurse scheduling or interfacing or system monitoring, a lot of these are rote tasks that drive job dissatisfaction. So if we can use AI as a mechanism to drive a more productive and happier workforce, you have better employee retention, that drives more productivity. The productivity losses from onboarding and ramping a new employee, it's something that's hard to quantify, but it's a real cost on every business.
So, some pilots involving AI have stalled. I mean, are there sort of factors that you see coming up with those AI projects that don't really get off the ground or don't really meet those expectations? Is there sort of common elements in some of the setbacks that organizations see?
I think the easiest answer to that is to talk about hallucination. There was a great article that came out from 8VC around a framework for implementing AI in healthcare. And they were talking about, I believe it was the FDA's threshold for approving an AI device. And I can't remember the exact threshold, but it was really high. And they compared that efficacy, I believe it was for like a radiology, an AI radiology device, to in situ performance of radiologists. And the bar for an approved AI device was, X. And the real world experience of radiologists was like X minus 10 percentage points, like the accuracy. And so I think that that's a big part of the spread of AI solutions, is you see them not being perfect. And we have to remind ourselves that as humans, we're fallible too. We make mistakes all the time. And AI at this point is really a reflection of us. It's trained on evidence that we created and we've published. And so if AI is using the same body of evidence that we as humans are doing, like it's going to be fallible too. And that's why we need to have systems where humans are in the loop. There is a more talked about now change management effort that we as an industry and not just healthcare, like global community need to navigate as we think about change management, because we have to retrain entire workforces around how to use AI, what to expect, how to check AI. We had a conversation internally the other day. Someone was using ChatGPT to build a meeting agenda, and it had a meeting agenda with like 3-minute increments, and it was an hour-long meeting with so many different topics. And again, it's well-intentioned, but it needs editing. And I think that where you see a lot of drop-off of pilots is that the change management effort was understated. And I think that that's where we need to mature overall in how we're implementing these solutions, is building not just the tech implementation, but also the change management. I hearken back to the implementation of EHR. You go and you look at those organizations that implemented an EHR and they expected their workforce to come in and just start using it and be as productive as they were before. Well, that was never the case. There was tons of optimization cycles. You go back to 2009 through 2014 when the big meaningful use years were, there were so many people, consultants, organizations dedicated to EHR optimization. And we're moving into that era again. It's going to be AI optimization. How do you change your workflows, your staffing models, your patient education, your provider education, your technology and administrator education to really consider how AI should be used? And I think it's really important to realize, like, we're in early days with agents and LLMs, and frankly, it's the worst AI we're going to use. The AI models that we have today are enormously better than what we had a year ago, and it's still the worst technology we will use because they just continue to improve. It's like if you go back and look at the first iPhone, it basically was an iPod that you could make a phone call with. And today we've got like a full-fledged computer in our pocket. And so I think that just like when we think about where we are going, it's going to keep getting better and better. And as human beings, we're going to get better and better about the change management to make the most of the technology.
I just want to ask a little bit more about safety because it's such an important topic and it's really interesting how you explained it. And I think you're right. Like, there's medical errors that happen now from human doctors and other clinicians. But at the same time, we all know if there's inevitably when an AI solution leads to a preventable death, that's going to be a big story, and that's probably going to raise a lot of questions about the safety of AI. So, how do you have realistic expectations for safety with AI, while at the same time making sure that you're not introducing algorithms or solutions that might actually make it less safe for patients?
It's interesting. I think that governance is something that entrepreneurs and technologists often will grumble at because it's like, oh, is governance going to slow us down? I take an opposite view. I think that an organization, whether you're a payer or a provider or a life sciences organization that has a strong view on AI governance can be a huge accelerator to adoption. How do you, when you think about AI agents, you have to think of those as your employees. So if you have a quality and a safety committee as part of a health system or a hospital that is reviewing errors that are performed by your clinicians or their teams, you need to be including the agents. And you need to be providing that feedback to the technologists who are building and training those agents. And so I think that there is a need for really strong governance that's defined early and revised often to help implement and guide these AI solution providers. I also think that there is a human element of this. We like to find something to blame. When you get into a car accident, you always want to know who's at fault. Accidents happen, and I understand that there's an attribution of fault because that's the way we're built. And I think that we need to, as a society, figure out how we're going to supervise AI, where we need to have a human in the loop, and where AI can't and isn't ready to perform. And those are tests that need to be continuously monitored and adjusted. But, I think for a lot of low acuity events, there are a lot of applications of AI that can drive massive productivity and satisfaction that aren't even touching patient care. There's an RFI that came out today from the ONC and ASTP around the recommendations for AI use in clinical care. But when you think about all of the different functions inside of payers and providers, ranging from prior authorization to coding and documentation, revenue cycle, payment integrity, all of those functions, like a lot of those are adjacent to patient care, not the direct delivery of care. And I think that we need to make sure that our governance model accounts for what are those services where AI is being used that it could create actual patient care delivery risk? And where are the administrative cases where we need to create like a faster lane to test and deploy AI?
Well, we are getting into a new year. What needs to happen in 2026 to make more progress in AI?
I think that there are a few really critical elements. I mean, we hit on governance already. Your AI governance policy, given the pace of change in this space, cannot be on a binder on a shelf. It needs to be a living and breathing document that is constantly updated as models and technology improves. The second is data foundation. All of these models rely on longitudinal, clean training data sets. And if you don't have a data strategy and a data plan, your AI strategy is weakened. It's like, building a house on top of a weak foundation. It's not going to be as durable and as long lasting. And I think the third is really challenge your teams to innovate. An exercise we do all the time at Arcadia is map out a process, assuming that there could be no humans in the loop. And I tell my teams all the time, you don't have to build to that, but I want to challenge leaders to think differently about how to do the things we do every day. And so when you challenge someone to figure out how to use AI or RPA or machine learning to automate a process that today is highly manual and have no humans in the loop, then you can say, okay, here's where we are today. Here's where you could be in the future. And then let's allow that governance model to dictate where on that slider between humans completely in the loop or fully autonomous, where should we build to? Where is our risk tolerance? What's safe and effective? And how do you get there? And so I think when you look at that, it's really about workforce retraining, rewiring our brains to think about how to envision a future that's AI assisted and AI powered, having the governance model to support that, and having the data foundation that supports it as well.
Well, now we're getting near the end of our window, but did want to ask us maybe one final question, something we always like to ask healthcare leaders. What's a lesson in leadership that you've learned that's been really valuable to you that might be valuable to other healthcare leaders?
This is a new one for me. I read a book recently over the Thanksgiving holiday. We grow up being told you want to treat people the way that you want to be treated. And the author of this leadership book said, one of the challenges as you ascend to leadership is your job is actually not to treat people the way you want to be treated. It's to treat people the way they want to be treated. And so I've been spending a lot of time thinking about how I'm going to live that in 2026 and making sure that my customers, my leadership team, my employees are being treated with the respect and the care that they want to receive, not necessarily the way that I would want to be treated, because everyone has a different style and a different motivation.
That's a really interesting lesson too, because some people maybe need more pats on the back than others. Other people
Exactly.
maybe like to bounce all ideas off, and other people want maybe a little more separation per se. So like different people, different generations, everybody's unique, and meeting them at their own space is really an important skill to have.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this flew by really quickly. So thanks for taking the time to talk to us today. We covered a lot of ground today, and really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Ron. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks for listening to Databook, a podcast from Chief Healthcare Executive. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For the latest news, in-depth analysis, and deeper dives on the big issues in the world of healthcare, visit chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X. I'm Ron Southwick. Thanks for joining us. Take care.